In July 2010 in North Carolina, a four-year-old girl was admitted to hospital in a critical condition. The man who had been caring for her claimed that she'd fallen off a bed and hit her head, but doctors soon discovered that her little body was literally covered from head to toe in injuries. In fact, she had been the victim of both a horrific physical and sexual assault, and she would die 3 days later. This is what happens when a mother's apathy leaves a vulnerable child in the hands of a sadistic monster. This is the murder of Tegan Alyssa Skeba. I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. So let's go back to the 16th of July 2010. It was a Friday, it's around noon, and it's in Johnston County, North Carolina. We have 21-year-old Jonathan Douglas Richardson, who arrives at the Johnston Memorial Hospital in Smithfield. And with him, he has 4-year-old Tegan Alyssa Skeba. Now, she had just turned 4, literally days earlier. She was this delightful, happy, loving child. Apparently, she was a child that really liked those kind of comforting snuggles and was very affectionate. She was really energetic. People described her as vivacious, lovable. But now, this vivacious, energetic child is unconscious and in a severely, and I mean severely critical condition. Richardson had basically had the care for that little girl for the last 10 days. So he had been the sole primary carer in that time scale. Her mother, 26-year-old Helen Reyes, she was actually away in New Mexico on Army Reserve training. Reyes had separated from Tegan's father, Jerry Skeba. He was actually in prison at the time because he'd been involved in a drug trafficking conviction. And I suppose that we can automatically make some assumptions there that there is some dysfunction within the world of this little girl. To have a dad who's in prison because of drug trafficking is certainly not ideal. But arguably, mum's doing Army Reserve training, so clearly there is a pro-social level to her behaviour. We can at least essentially draw that from where she's gone and what she's doing. But I immediately have questions about why you would leave this young guy for 10 days with the care of your child. I mean, he's a kid himself, realistically. He's very young anyway. Now, I'm not gonna make a suggestion that a 21-year-old isn't capable of looking after a child. They clearly are. People have children at that point. But it really concerns me that a mum who has gone off on training chooses this particular individual to spend that time period with her little girl. He's young, he's not actually related to the child by blood, and arguably, has he had any experience looking after children? These are all things that should play into decision making where somebody is going to actually be in charge of the care of your child. Now, according to Reyes, the reason that she and Tegan's father had actually split up was he'd become violent, and that had happened soon after the birth. So, essentially, like I said, not an ideal scenario to be born into. And actually, to be fair, even though a lot of people will say, well, was he not violent prior to the birth of Tegan? Actually, what we see when it comes down to women who have babies with a partner, often violence starts or is amplified after the birth of a child. So that is contextual, and I think we can believe her and believe that she wasn't knowingly in a horrible relationship prior to giving birth. So she had actually been in a relationship with Richardson for just 6 months. Now, bear that in mind, 6 months. And she'd literally only been living with him for 4 weeks when she decides that it's going to be acceptable to leave her little girl unsupervised with him. Now, I'm sorry, he isn't a licensed childcare professional. He's young. They've been together a really short period of time. Anybody can behave for 6 months. Can we all be honest about that? Anyone can behave for 2 years. And she's already had an experience with an adult who's been violent towards her. So she should have big red flags and alarm bells ringing whenever she's around guys just based on her previous experience. And I'm not trying to just project blame onto her at this moment in time because clearly at this point she needs to go away and she thinks that she's potentially got a relationship with somebody that she can trust. But it is just totally neglectful to decide that somebody you've been involved with for such a short period of time can take care of your child for a 10-day period. So Rees basically left Tegan in Richardson's care on the 6th of July 2010, her fourth birthday. That was literally the day that her mother left to leave him in this care. What a birthday present this is going to be. And 10 days after, she's in hospital. And she's not just in hospital. She's in hospital, unresponsive and clinging to her life. That's all it's taken. 10 days of being alone with this man. Now, when I tell you that the doctors were absolutely blindsided by Tegan's condition, I cannot emphasize it more. I cannot emphasize just how dire this little girl's condition was. And it was obvious just looking at her. We're not talking about when they go for scans, when the pathologist report comes back, people are shocked by the injury. We're talking about doctors physically looking at her and knowing the treatment of this child has been diabolical, despicable, gruesome, brutal, and also, as we'll talk about this in subsequent moments, fatal, because that's what it ends up being. Now, of course, Richardson comes in and has a reason why this little girl's covered in injuries. Yeah, she's fallen off a bed and she's banged her head. Because obviously, as any parent knows, when somebody falls off their bed and bangs their head, they're going to have a multitude of injuries. I mean, it just goes without saying. Could you imagine if that was the benchmark for this kind of situation where a child is unresponsive and clinging to life? I mean, hospitals would just be full, wouldn't they? Every child in the history of being a child has fell on their head at some point. And 99.9% of children are fine. Most don't even have to go to hospital. Some do, and they're cleared as okay. And some very, very unusual cases, there are bigger problems. Of course, that does happen. But ultimately, that would be one area of injury, and that's not what we're talking about. Of course, he said that when that happened, he'd done the right thing. He'd applied an ice pack on her head, because that's going to resolve all the other injuries we're going to discuss shortly. And the doctors know straight away there is something seriously wrong. This version of events isn't playing out. Her body is telling a story that's very different and distinct from what he's describing. And her body is covered in injuries, covered in them. She's in a really critical condition. And they said that when she arrived at hospital, she was minutes away from dying. The medical staff, they actually alert the authorities at 1 p.m. So the police are called because they can see this is something that has not happened by mistake. And I'm just going to describe one nurse's reaction. And all I can say about this nurse is if only the world was full of professionals like this. Honestly, when I came across this report, I just felt such a level of respect and admiration, because this particular nurse looks at her injuries and she is absolutely horrified and she's rageful. And she actually goes and confronts Richardson. He's attempting to leave the hospital at this point. And as he's trying to leave, she just grabs him from behind. As he's exiting the door, she gets him by the throat and she forces him physically into a waiting room until the police arrived. She even asked for a gun to ensure he didn't leave. I mean, if the world only worked that way, could you imagine? I mean, that kind of power, determination, courage, even causing her a potential issue with her own professionalism and potential complaints about her behaviour and not caring, because all she has running through her veins in that moment is rage, retribution, and a desire for this individual to not get away with what he's done to that child. There is just something so provoking about watching a child in this kind of distress, and her reaction is exactly how people should react, because she is letting him know you are going nowhere. This child's life is in danger because of you, and you're going to pay the consequences. And when you think about a vocation just running through every cell in somebody's body, that's why she's a nurse. It's as simple as that. Now, the doctors and nurses who were at Johnston Memorial Hospital, they conclude pretty immediately that she needs intensive care. And because of that, she gets airlifted to North Carolina Children's Hospital. That's in Chapel Hill for treatment. And she's still unconscious there. They said that when they examined her, she did have a faint pulse, but they could tell that she had very strained breathing. Her eyes were dilated, and also she was just really limp and lifeless. And the doctors at that point said that it was unlikely that she would even live through the night. They also established that she got a blood clot on the brain. And even if she survived at this point, they said, look, she would be really severely brain damaged. One doctor commented afterwards and said, when he examined her, there was literally not one part of her body that had been spared for injury. That is absolutely harrowing. That doctor said they hadn't seen that level of injury in 25 years of medical practice. In fact, he said that the reaction that he felt when he saw was that he nearly vomited. And this is somebody who will put people back together after car accidents. This is somebody who will have seen the most heinous of injuries on children and adults. And yet the injuries on this little girl were so gut-wrenching that literally the contents of his stomach nearly came up. Meanwhile, of course, we have Richardson. And it's rare that one can feel such an immediate level of disgust that this person provokes. Honestly, I cover cases all the time. I'm always looking at what creates these killers, what's going on in their lives, and trying to piece together the jigsaw of creation, that pen portrait of possibility. But just the way that he reacts immediately is enough to make me want him locked away forever. And I don't even feel that he needs a trial. That's the kind of person we're discussing right now. So they arrest Richardson immediately on suspicion of child abuse. And when the officers arrest him, which you would think, you know, this is a dominating moment. This is authoritarian reality where somebody is saying, I'm going to take your freedom away. You are going to expect some kind of reaction. It might be anger. It might be shock. It might be resistance. It might be all of those things, because clearly, if you're innocent, you're going to be rageful and terrified. If you're guilty, you're going to be resistant and potentially even abusive. And these are normal contextual reactions. What you don't expect is that when the officer makes the arrest, he has a grin on his face and he actually asks them, what are y'all going to do? Tie me down and cut me up? Do you know what? I'm just going to throw it out there. I actually think that would be an appropriate course of action. Is it possible that these kind of comments and statements could be seen as a permission base to go ahead? Because tying him down and cutting him up, that would save a lot of money in court fees and a huge amount of time when it comes down to thinking about incarceration. And after all, he did suggest it. Just throwing it out there. But that smirky reaction and that kind of like, what are you actually going to be able to do to me? What is that telling you about the psychology of this killer? Now, when it comes down to Richardson's life, it was strange. He'd been living in this really small shed. It was 15 foot by 13 foot. And that shed was just located behind his grandparents' home along Old Sanders Road in Smithfield, North Carolina. It had no running water. It had no bathroom. And apparently it was really cluttered and dirty. But the very fact that it's not sanitary is enough to make you think, what on earth is an adult doing in this situation? Why are they there? Also, what the hell is he doing caring for a child in this situation? So literally, Tegan's been taken care of in that shed as well. And also they find immediately that the sleeping conditions are very questionable. So Richardson and Tegan had slept on a single air mattress. How uncomfortable would that be anyway? And what I would say about Richardson's grandparents are, well, in the local community, they were considered decent, respectable people. And they essentially didn't know, apparently, what was happening behind the walls of their grandson's makeshift residence. But it would concern me, I'm sorry, if some grandson of mine were in a scenario where he's got a young child with him and I know there's no running water or bathroom. Maybe I'm just being really unfair. And I'm not saying these are not decent people. I'm just saying, would you allow your grandchild to be in the care of a young child in a place that's completely unsanitary? That makes absolutely no sense to me, particularly as Richardson actually had a room in his grandparents' property. So it was completely optional for him to actually be in a comfortable situation and facility with his child that he's in the charge of. But He chooses instead to live in the shed outside. And I guess the reasons for that become very clear regarding his motivation. But like I said, sometimes I feel like all logic and understanding abandons these situations. And certainly if I was an adult looking at this, I'd be like, you can't be in that shed. Get yourself in the house where there's running water and make this child safe. Now, when you think about Richardson, just by the details I've talked about so far, we can all agree he's a not right. But also, prior to this, he's been on the police radar. And he'd actually previously been found guilty of assaulting a woman. Subsequently, he'd actually been asked to enter an abuser treatment program. He had to attend a domestic violence program in Johnston County. Also, he'd had previous convictions for communicating threats and damage to property. So obviously, historically, we see that he's not necessarily a very pro-social individual, full stop. When it comes down to Tegan's injuries, it is truly shocking. She had a total of 144 separate injury sites. So she'd suffered severe trauma to the head, and that caused brain swelling. And the swelling was so bad that her brain matter was almost leaking from her skull. So they believed that she'd been really violently shaken. Both her arms were broken. Several nails had been pried off her fingers. She had cuts and lacerations, bruises. She had whip marks all over her body. And along with those lesions, there were scabs and scars, and she had more than 60 bite marks. And the bite marks, by the way, were later found to be consistent with Richardson's teeth. Bites actually covered her from head to toe, and they went from a range of class 2 to class 5. Now, a class 5 bite, that means that it would be a bite that would rip off the skin and cause excruciating pain. In some places, her flesh was torn horrifically. Her right nipple had even been bitten off. Now, a forensic dentist who studied bite marks was so shocked by Tegan's physical condition, he actually prayed that she would die. He didn't want her to have to suffer anymore. Also, they found marks on her neck because she'd been strangled with a cord of some kind. Bits of copper wire were also found embedded in her body because it seems that she'd also been beaten with a frayed end of an electrical cord. And it was also very evident that Tegan had been horrifically sexually violated. She'd suffered dreadful vaginal and anal tearing. And when they looked at her bleeding, her injuries were so bad that she'd lost 70% of the blood from her body. This is a 4-year-old child. This is a child who has literally just turned 4. I don't think I've ever, going through autopsies and pathologist reports, come to see a range of injuries as grotesque as this. And I have read a lot of them. But it feels like every area of Tegan's body was violated in the most brutal and grotesque and consistently sustained ways. Medical examiners actually concluded that she'd suffered from extensive abuse, including the beatings. And when they formalised her actual cause of death, it had been through blunt force head trauma, and that caused the bleeding on the brain. The investigation that was done by the sheriff stated that it was the worst case of child abuse that his department had ever dealt with. Ever. So every single step of the way, from the nurse who literally has to drag this abuser back in, the doctor who almost vomits, the pathologist looking at the body, the sheriff investigating the case, they all agree they have never seen injuries like this before. They are so enormous. And even though they have seen abuse before and death of children before, they are so distinct from what they've experienced prior to this that it just is resounding in how this case stands out. It's clear that she's been a victim of an absolute sustained campaign of torture. And they noted that the wounds that she had on her body, they were at different stages of infection. And that meant that they'd been inflicted at different times. Now, bear in mind, Tegan was 40 pounds. She's tiny. And they said that her little 40-pound body was literally a crime scene. It is just impossible to compute how a human adult can do this to this gorgeous little girl. Now, the same day that Richardson had taken Tegan to hospital, investigators go and search the shed because they need to look for potential evidence that will contribute to him being brought to justice. They collect information from the air mattress, that's been the bed of course, items of Tegan's clothing, they find a condom wrapper, a shotgun, rifle ammunition, knives, a camera, duct tape. I mean, those descriptions are enough to say we already know the kind of person who we're talking about where Richardson is concerned. I mean, the fact he's got duct tape, etc., in that shed, doesn't have running water, doesn't have a bathroom, but it's got knives, cameras, duct tape, air rifles, ammunition, etc. It demonstrates the mindset of this killer. Also, there was drug paraphernalia, they found cannabis, they also found a torn electrical cord and also a wooden rod. And in total, more than 30 items that they seized had Tegan's blood on them. That includes the electrical cord, the wooden rod, underwear, pants, a sleeping bag, and a pillowcase. And they could not believe what the living conditions were like. It was horrific in this really tiny cluttered space. There was loads of alcohol containers. There was partially eaten food. There was scattered clothing and it stunk of urine and feces. It's just walking in to a child's torture chamber. That's the only way we can describe it. Richardson's camera, of course, they check, they seize that. And on it, there is this truly disturbing 37-second video. And it's taken at the time that he's looking after Tegan. So this is at 2:31 a.m. on the 10th of July, 2010. And you're right, 2:31 a.m. What is he doing with a child up at this period of time? He'd been looking after her, by the way, at this point for 4 days. And this is just 6 days before he takes her to the actual hospital. Now, footage shows Tegan dressed in this pink shirt and dark pants. And she's got her arms outstretched. She's facing a wall. And she is begging Richardson not to hurt her. And while she's begging, she's made to repeat 6 times, when I have to pee, I promise I will tell someone. Now, by this point, just to let you know, both her arms were clearly broken. So they could see that. They could physically see this child had had her arms broken. And she's being bullied and abused because she needs to go to the toilet and she's obviously wet herself. Let's also acknowledge that children who are very badly abused often have problems with the toilet. Children who are sexually violated will have problems with the toilet because you know what? Biologically and physiologically, they cannot handle the things that are being placed in areas and cavities that should not be placed there. So it is normal. In fact, children completely lose control of their bladder and bowels when this kind of abuse is happening. So he's causing it. And yet the consequence is he wants to use that to torture her and validate and permission base his torture further. They can also hear Richardson's voice and he is shouting her on the tape to speak up and she's clearly distressed. And then she's just made to repeat another 4 times this phrase. That would prove to be, by the way, the last image of Tegan conscious and alive. But I think that's enough to denote the kind of horror that that child was enduring from the get-go when her mother left her in his care. Now, during the police questioning, Richardson is obviously trying to get out of it. I mean, how this absolute loser thinks he's ever going to get away with this, I've got no idea, but he's going to go and try, isn't he? At the end of the day, I'm sure he thinks he can talk his way out of anything because he's got such an arrogance and superiority about him, even though her injuries tell the only story that needs to be told. But initially, he just sticks to his story. Yeah, Tegan had been jumping on the airbed. I mean, don't know about you, we've got quite a few airbeds at our house because we have a lot of people come to stay. My kids are the kind of kids who just invite anyone round and sometimes for quite a long period of time. We're that kind of household. We've got decent airbeds. They're not 6 foot high. They're literally on the floor. But apparently, yeah, this particular airbed is something like it's out of the childhood nursery story, Princess and the Pea, where it was just like 30 foot high, and that's why she falls off, hits her head, and is so badly injured. I mean, honestly, this is so frustrating. Because can you imagine being an investigator? The airbed's little and on the floor. It's in a shed, which are not known for their enormous ceilings. I'm just going to throw it out there. It's not often you walk into a shed and are like, oh, this is like being in a cathedral. No, because that doesn't happen. It's a shed. But this is it. He's going to try and push this narrative that she's fallen off, she's hit the head the night before, and this is why she's in this state. And the other excuses included that she had eczema. I kid you not. He's literally saying this to time-served detectives, that she had eczema. Because obviously the problem is, what people don't understand is that Richardson is obviously an incredibly bright medic. I mean, the fact that he was almost throttled by a nurse trying to exit the hospital because she'd just seen the injuries. Obviously, people like her are massively mistaken because it's just eczema. And we all know eczema can be quite severe, but can't be mistaken for major bite injuries, for example, or for traumatic infection because horrific injuries have occurred and just been left. But hey, obviously Richardson knows a great deal more. Also, the bites, you know, all over her body, some of them so severe that she's had her skin torn off. Apparently, they were done by her young cousin. I mean, Tegan's four. Is her young cousin Jaws? No, her young cousin isn't, is it? Because a young cousin, firstly, would have a tiny mouth, and secondly, isn't a Rottweiler. But again, he's just trying to create this story to make it more difficult for the police to see it as an open and closed case. We all know he's banged to rights, but at the end of the day, this is what he's going to play. And clearly, the investigators start to pull this story apart, and obviously they describe, well, you know what? We have literally a doctor's report by people who are experienced in the field, hand-delivered by the nurse who wanted to throttle you. I'm adding that in. It's artistic license. That didn't actually happen, but I imagine that she would have happily done that. But he starts realizing that the multitude of devastating injuries are not going to be in line with his story. So then he starts to change his story again. And this is an absolute red flag for investigators. I mean, we all remember things differently at different times, and memory is only ever a memory of a memory. And you can embellish and you can disregard certain parts of that when you tell the story again. But for an investigator, when it's coming down to something so out of the blue, where something terrible happens, we tend to have quite a good grip on how things play out. So when you start to alter according to new evidence that's being given to you, clearly that shows deception. So he then says, look, okay, I did actually lose it because Tegan urinated and defecated in the bed that we were sharing 2 days earlier. Yeah, she's four, you've no toilet, you absolute cretin. So even bringing this in makes no sense because he has elected to be in a place which is unsanitary and doesn't have the facilities for a child to go to the toilet. So he says when this happens, he sees it as an appropriate consequence to whip her with an electric cord. Also, he says that he's bipolar and that little things set him off. Well, let me tell you, I've worked in mental health for 20 years. Bipolar, little things don't set you off. And certainly little things that could potentially set you off in a depressive context or a manic context are physiological and not linked to somebody else's behaviour. Full stop. People who are bipolar certainly don't suddenly think that person is going to be justifiably beaten by me because I'm having a bad day. How dare he use bipolar as that reasoning? It is so disrespectful to people who actually suffer from the condition, and it is not played out in any research that that kind of behaviour occurs. Now, whilst he is alone in the interrogation room, he's actually captured on the phone making a call to Tegan's mother, because bear in mind, they video everything these days, don't they? For their protection as much as for the taboo to be recorded so it can be brought in court. But it's also for the person who's being interviewed so that nobody can coerce them into saying something or force them into saying something. But he should know that he is being videoed, and he uses this, in my opinion, as an opportunity to try to manipulate and seem like a good guy. Little does he know that only if Jesus himself came down from heaven on that video, cleansed him of his sins, and brought Tegan back to life, could this ever be something where he would be seen as anything other than the devil incarnate. So this is what he says. I'm smiling just because it's so ludicrous. It's just bizarre. But this is what he says. I wanted to have kids with you when you got home. Sorry? Just let's go through that. You wanted to have kids with me when I got home. Yeah, I wanted to have kids with you when you got home. You do know that they take 9 months, and often it can be a period of time before you get pregnant. You just don't have them. It's not like going to Costco, just ordering a couple at the till. Sorry, I digress. But again, this is why it's ridiculous. So I wanted to have kids with you when you got home because I loved being around her so much. Note, past tense. I loved being around her so much. Massive indicator of guilt right there. I loved her to death. Honestly, you couldn't write this. He said it, but you couldn't write this. I loved her to death. You definitely did something to her to death. He said, Helen, I do, and I would never intentionally hurt her. So I'll put that together for you because I couldn't help just breaking off into my side monologues because it's so ludicrous. So he said in full, I wanted to have kids with you when you got home because I loved being around her so much. I loved her to death, Helen, I do, and I would never intentionally hurt her.
I wanted to have a kid with you when you got home because I loved being around her so much. I loved her to death, Helen, I do. And I would never do anything to intentionally hurt her. She's never had a father. In the way she's warmed up to me, she loved me so much. You know my mind is messed up, don't you? You people said, Helen, I just want to tell you that I didn't mean to do it. And I didn't hurt her yet.
Honestly, what is wrong with this excuse for a human being? Oh, he's a massive psychopathic child sexual predator and deviant. That will be, I suppose, a definition we can start with. Also, he tells her that his mind was messed up and it had been an accident. Honestly, if this child predator called me and I was the parent, they wouldn't be able to find me because I would be hiring some kind of mechanical equipment to break into the prison so that I could deal with Richardson myself. Genuinely, I would not be answering his calls, but somebody would seriously need to restrain me because very bad things would happen. I believe the internet can lead you to some pretty interesting areas where you can build things yourself. I've seen that happen, and I would try to build something so that I could then, shall we say, eradicate this piece of crap from the world. As a mother, knowing what your child has been through, knowing the kind of injuries, I could not even consider answering a phone call from this horrific human being. Now, Richardson is initially charged with felony child abuse and remanded in custody because, of course, for a period of time, Tegan is alive. But it soon becomes a first-degree murder charge because even though Tegan does hang on in a critical condition for 3 days when she's admitted to the hospital, and don't get me wrong, her mother stayed at her side that entire time, but in spite of them doing their best efforts on the 19th of July 2010, so this is less than 2 weeks after her fourth birthday, Tegan succumbs to her injuries and she's declared brain dead by the doctors. When Richardson learns of her death, he shows no remorse because he doesn't have it within his mental capacity. We're talking about an individual who is so dysfunctional, so disgusting, so psychopathic in my belief system, so narcissistic, that the only person he's going to be thinking about is himself. And obviously, when he's dealing with a felony of child abuse compared to first-degree murder, it's a whole heap of difference when it comes down to the court case and the sentencing. And so he will be considering that himself. He'll be thinking of that himself. So Tegan's mother, at this point, she is also arrested, and she's actually charged with child neglect. And the reason that they do that is they feel, as the authorities, that by leaving her child in Richardson's care, in Richardson custody, she hasn't thought about her daughter's needs. And they also feel that the abuse had started before Helen Reyes had actually left to go to New Mexico. They said that she'd been present when Tegan had been beaten, when she'd been forced to drink alcohol, which makes me bubble with anger. I mean, is it just me? But if somebody took your child, a little girl, and then forcibly beats the child and then makes her consume alcohol, it would be the last thing that person did to my child. I may be in prison for first degree murder, but my child would be safe. But apparently she's witnessed this and thought it was perfectly all right to just leave her child with this deviant. And other family members actually said that they'd witnessed Richardson shake Tegan to stop her crying. Now, I appreciate that when we're talking about a four-year-old child or a slightly younger than that, because obviously she's only just turned four, but you know, three and a half. If we compare that to somebody shaking a baby, well, it's a very different outcome on the whole, because a baby's brain still forming, baby's neck area not rigid, therefore shaken baby syndrome can occur, cause massive bleeds to the brain, and we see that regularly in these kind of cases where babies have been murdered. But in spite of the fact that she is older and therefore her neck is more rigid, she has more self-control when somebody's shaking her to protect herself to some degree, it's still incredibly dangerous. It can still cause major injuries to a child. If somebody violently shakes you as a youngster, the bleed to the brain can still occur. Breaks to certain areas of the neck can occur. We see this play out in pathologist reports. So the fact that he's doing this and he's doing it in front of people, that just demonstrates the level of concern that we should have for this little girl. Because if you're doing that visibly where witnesses are concerned, well, what are you doing in private? And also, what the hell is going on that people have actually seen this child being abused in such a horrendous way, both by a mother and by people who've seen Richardson do this, and no one's done anything about that? What is going on? If you see somebody harming a child this way, on one occasion, for 1 second, you speak to the services that can protect them, because that child is in mortal danger, full stop. But people have witnessed this, nothing gets done. And then Reyes just decides, yeah, this guy's perfect for me to leave my child with. It doesn't seem to give me any cause for concern that he's been brutally abusive towards her in front of me, forced alcohol down, and has been witnessed by other people shaking her in a dangerous way. Just seems like a perfect guy to babysit. Also, another thing that Reyes has done, and another reason why she gets charged, is that she basically cut off all communication with Tegan's paternal grandparents. Now, of course, she might not have a great relationship with Tegan's paternal grandparents because of the father, but they had previously cared for Tegan. They'd constantly tried to get in contact with the granddaughter. They wanted to have a relationship with her, and there was no success. It was like she cut off contact between them. They'd even offered to look after Tegan whilst her mum went on military training, but the offer had been turned down. And these are people who I appreciate brought up a child that became a violent man and who's in prison and has let Reyes down. But that doesn't mean that that's a reflection on their ability and skill to care for a child. And certainly, if it comes down to, do you want your kid to be in a shed without a toilet and running water and sanitation with an abusive person who you've been involved with for a really short period of time? Or would you just like really responsible adults to take care of them with a house, with a sink, with a toilet, with a bed? I'm just going to go for the shed. This seems like a totally rational thing to do. Just, what is going on here? We get to June 2011. So this is a year after Tegan's death. So in addition to the first degree murder, kidnapping and child abuse charges, Richardson is also indicted on charges of child rape and also sexual offences with a child, which is absolutely what should happen. What I told you earlier on demonstrates what type of child predator we are dealing with here. We are dealing with one of the highest level. Now, whilst he is in prison awaiting trial, Richardson isn't somebody who's going to behave. So there is just something so arrogant about this man. It is quite shocking. Because like I said, one, if you're a sexual predator in a prison, you should keep your head down. You should keep your head down for a whole heap of reasons, but the main one being, you're not light, you are the lowest of the low. You know? You are way below killing women. You are way below individuals who murder. You are at the bottom of the pile. You are hated. Because it doesn't matter what these men have done in prison. When it comes down to their offences, when they're non-sexual molesting cases, they are seen in a whole different category and they see themselves in a whole different category. And they themselves also have that trait where they know that they would protect a vulnerable child. So these are, yes, violent people. These are, yes, people involved in gangs. These are, yes, individuals who've done some pretty horrendous things at times. But they also know it's completely inappropriate to harm a child. And certainly when we're talking about sexual sadism towards a child, they want retribution for that child. So he should be keeping his head down, being quiet and moving through the system in a way that doesn't draw attention to him. But that's not how he is. He's really disruptive. And they end up giving him mood stabilizing meds. They lock him down constantly, but it doesn't make any difference. And he does things like he throws feces and urine at the staff, at other inmates as well. And he even goes so far as to incite other inmates to do the same, to do his dirty work. Also, he goes ahead and threatens to stab a prison guard. So he is as heinous as one can imagine. And the fact that he won't accept authority, the fact that he sees himself as above authority, I think psychological, that's another marker as well. Because what we're seeing is an individual who just doesn't see the requirement for a moral, emotional and social reality that most of us just follow. And we have to remember that even when people are in prison, and I know that there are examples in the world where prisons are unruly and prisons don't have the rules and security that they should. But for the most part, in the Western world, there is still a code of conduct. And he doesn't follow that code of conduct. And what we know about people who are psychopaths is that they themselves have problems with their emotional and social behavior. And this demonstrates, as far as I'm concerned, an absolute collision of that, aside from what we've already talked about regarding the grotesque treatment of this little girl. So we can see that's within his psyche, but this additionalizes the leverage that I believe we can apply to him being considered psychopathic. We get to the trial. So that commences February 2014. Now, the prosecutors had already at this point said, we want the death penalty if Richardson's found guilty. As far as we're concerned, it's a premeditated murder, because what they had historically looked at is how things had played out once Tegan's mother had been dropped off at the airport. So just to show you and introduce you to just why they think this was premeditated. He drops Tegan's mother off. Then he stops at a DIY store to buy a lock for the shed because he doesn't want anybody to get in. He keeps Tegan locked in that shed that's basically a torture chamber, let's say it as it is. And then he had spent the entire time, so those days he had her, subjected to a campaign of sadistic sexual, physical and psychological abuse for his pleasure. And it's very important because that's what it was for. It was for his pleasure. He dropped that woman off and he would not have been able to quickly enough get back to that shed because he had planned what he was going to do. He tortured, he tormented, he terrorized Tegan for 10 days. 10 of her last 13 days alive before ultimately she slips into that coma from which she never awoke. Can you imagine the agony, the fear, the longing for someone to save her in the hands of this horrific predator? When it came down to the witnesses in court, it was really tough. The witnesses really struggled because they'd all been really deeply traumatized by what they'd seen. So, for example, a seasoned deputy sheriff who'd responded to the initial call from the hospital, they broke down in court whilst giving evidence, said that the injuries to Tegan were the most horrifying thing I've ever seen done to a human being, especially a child. So in their entire career, literally, the case of Tegan was so ultimately shocking that there was not a comparison. And the court for this particular sheriff had to be adjourned because he couldn't compose himself. He needed time to just get himself back together. And he was the second police officer to break down whilst giving the testimony because it was just so devastating. So this is really unusual. These are seasoned professionals and it's too much. Now, during the break, when they kind of call for this recess because people are obviously struggling, Richardson just looks like he doesn't care. In fact, during this period, he's observed to smile frequently. You know when an adult says to you when you're a kid, you want to be careful, I'm going to wipe that smile off your face. Is there not some kind of judicial process where that would be considered appropriate? I don't know. Like some kind of cattle prod or taser every time. Like some kind of conditioning reality psychologically where you can just get the smile wiped off the face. Maybe just a stapler. Maybe just, because obviously other things can be relatively expensive, can't they? Just like a really big staple. The ones you see in like horror movies where somebody's chasing you with a staple gun. You know, those really big ones. And just pull the mouth down at each side and just staple accordingly. That would be a way of preventing them smiling, wouldn't it? Is that going too far? Is that maybe going a little bit too far? Why in my head does it seem like a completely rational suggestion? It actually feels like a very appropriate course of action. Anyway, again, I digress. Apologies. Here's the, I'm a little bit triggered by this case. Now, Tegan's mother, Reese, she obviously is also going to be there to give evidence against Richardson. And when asked by the prosecutor why she was in court, she replied, I'm here for Tegan. I'm here for my baby, for justice. She did also admit to the court that she'd got a really tumultuous relationship with Richardson and that she had, if she was honest with herself, seen injuries that had been on her daughter on more than one occasion after her daughter had been left with Richardson, but that he'd been very clever at giving her excuses. However, on one occasion, she also said that she found welts on her. And at this point, Richardson said that he'd literally whipped her with an electrical cord for being sick on his chair. Now, Reyes said that the reaction to that was that she was furious and she told him never to touch her again. Is it just me? But I imagine that if somebody told me he had whipped my child with an electrical cord because my child had been sick, which is something a child cannot help, that electrical cord would probably be used as some kind of evidence in the murder case when I had taken that cord, wrapped it around his neck for a long period of time. Well, at least long enough so that he'd never get to do anything like that again. I just can't compute how she would feel having a go at him is any kind of consequence. You don't hit a child full stop, but to hit a child with an electrical cord because they've been sick, I mean, he is showing an absolute abusive reality to his behaviour. He's a danger to be around children. And being furious with him, that does not cut the mustard. I'm sorry. That's a ridiculous reaction. Apparently, she decided that, yeah, he's stern with her kid, but that really he loves and cares for her and that he's a real father figure to her. Like, in what universe are you living where a man who whips a child with an electrical cord for being sick is a good father figure? What planet are we on where this is seen as appropriate? And she even says that one of the reasons that she kind of let him be in her life was that Tegan said that she liked Richardson. Yes, because Tegan's a little girl looking for approval. Anybody knows that children want their parents' approval. If a parent seems happy with somebody and a child has fears and frustrations and concerns about another partner of that parent, when the parent asks the child who is scared of that adult, do you like him? 9 out of 10 times the kid is going to be like, yeah, I like him, because you want approval from the parent psychologically and you're fearful of their partner. Because you don't want this partner who's already been validated for attacking you and shaking you and being seen to cause awful injuries to you in front of said parent, they're not going to feel comfortable acknowledging that they are terrified of them. And that ideally, if somebody could find a combine harvester and just drive over them, that would be a better outcome for all involved. They're just going to nod their head and agree. You don't take that seriously. You take the behavior of the adult around the child seriously, which is highly abusive. Apparently, she also said that she wanted him to be a dad. I don't believe that for a second. I don't even think a child of 4 years of age really understands the concept of what that would entail. And certainly we would not take that seriously. That's about a parent wanting to feel good about a situation when they secretly know that it's bad. That's about a parent feeling that if they can get the child to comply and collude with their own perspective of what they want, that that legitimizes the reality of their situation, even when it's an abusive one. And that's appalling. Now, in the trial, what I would say is that point where the mum says, oh, actually, she wanted you to be her father, he apparently showed emotion at that point and wiped his eyes. I would hazard a guess it's more likely he was having an allergic reaction than a reaction emotionally to this, genuinely, because this is not somebody who even has the capacity to know what being a father would be. And I don't believe that suddenly he's going to be overwhelmed by emotion when somebody's saying that Tegan wishes that he had been her father. Now, Rees also in court admits that she shouldn't have left her daughter with Richardson. No shit, Sherlock. I mean, I think the outcome of what I've talked about is enough to acknowledge that no one would expect anybody to think on reflection it was a good idea. But then she also stated, I never thought I'd come home or get a phone call that something was severely wrong with my baby. I live with this every day of my life. I miss her every single day of my life. Good. Good. Because you chose to leave her with an abusive man who had abused her in front of you, who admitted to whipping her with an electric cord when she had been sick, who had been seen by people to shake her violently, and you made that choice. You are not the victim. You are nowhere near any spectrum of being the victim in this case. Your little girl was the victim, and you are part of the problem that led to this perpetrator having access to do the things that he did. And it should weigh heavy on your conscience, and you shouldn't miss her every day. You should repent every day. You shouldn't miss being a mother to her. You should feel that you missed what being a mother was to her, in my lowly opinion. And like I said, she is not the guilty party when you consider what we're talking about. And do I believe that she thought her daughter would be murdered? No, but she was happy to leave her daughter with an abusive partner. And that is unforgivable. And that is also highly preventable. You just leave her with somebody you can trust. In this case, the paternal grandparents would have done the job well. Of course, during the trial, the jury have to be shown really graphic autopsy photos of Tegan's injuries. Jurors were absolutely devastated. They were all visibly upset. And her paternal grandfather, who had obviously said that they would be there to look after her, they could have offered her shelter during those 10 days. He literally had to leave the courtroom. And you can understand that because as far as they're concerned, they were available. They were making as many opportunities to connect as possible, and they were all getting rejected. And the consequence is they don't have a granddaughter anymore because of that. And now they're having to look at what happened during that period of time when actually they were available to give good care to that little girl. They were also shown, as well as the horrific death pictures, the photos about a month before she died, in which she had a black eye, and allegedly that had been caused by Richardson. Again, what is this man doing around this child, full stop? Now, of course, the defence have to create some kind of response. They have to figure out a defence that could potentially prevent him being put to death. And they come up with this. And for those of you, and I know a lot of you, because you get in contact with me, have been abused as kids, this is going to be really triggering for you. Because you know, and I know, that the last thing you would ever do is raise a hand to a child. In fact, you are far more likely the character of the nurse who physically throttled this man to prevent him leaving. So I warn you, because when I say it is infuriating for a defense to use this kind of claim to try to prevent this individual getting his just desserts, I mean it. It's going to be upsetting. So the defense claims that Tegan's death was partly the result of Richardson's own experiences of being abused as a child. So his father was allegedly a very violent man. He was violent towards Richardson. He was violent towards Richardson's mother, to the point where Richardson's mother actually left him and even attempted to have him killed by a hitman, which is obviously incredibly extreme. But then again, we could say, well, what kind of abuse level would provoke such a reaction? I mean, she must have been in a horrible scenario where she thinks that the only way to escape is to actually have him killed. And actually, with battered woman syndrome, we do see that these women who are enduring such horrendous environments, they see this very black and white thinking, which is, I'll never be able to escape unless I do A, which is have them removed completely, or B, die myself. In this case, it's potentially that she decided the best way to get rid of him from their lives is to have him ultimately killed. I'm not defending that. I'm saying that psychologically, that is something that we see in battered woman syndrome. Now, it ends up that his father does actually get shot in the head when Richardson's 1 year old, but he survives. And Richardson's left with his dad. So he's his only child. He's brought up by a single father. And allegedly, this single father was a very angry man. Apparently, the only attention he ever showed him was when he was abusing him. Apparently, he'd whip his buttocks and legs with a belt if he misbehaved. So the defense go on to say, well, you know why Richardson is the way he is. Richardson is the way he is because he views abuse as a sign of love, care, and attention. Sorry, can we just run through that again with me? So you're going into court to defend your client, in this case Richardson, and you've come up with a theory that kids who are abused, they relate horrible, painful abuse to love. That's what we're going for. I'm just going to ask you a question. If a child saw abuse that's violent, aggressive, hostile, full of pain as love, why would it ever get called abuse? Because surely they just feel that they were growing up in a loving environment. Yeah, seem to have a very logical point there, but we're just going to distort reality and hopefully package it up in a way where a jury goes, oh yeah, of course, that's love. At the end of the day, getting belted, getting abused, being hostility-wise, brought up in an environment of agony, that is something that feels loving. And we're going to run with that.
I wonder how far you're going to run. You're probably going to run straight to the death chamber as far as the death penalty is concerned. I'm gonna throw it out there. Honestly, like, don't get me wrong, I appreciate, for those of you who study this field, there have been studies on a neglected child versus an abused child. A neglected child, as in the child gets very little attention, affection, gets ignored, gets neglected on an emotional, physical, social, even sometimes a physical level regarding not being fed, etc. Their brains certainly suffer more than a child who's been physically abused, for example, because physical touch, even when it's violent, is to some degree apparently better than no touch at all. But the kids who've been violently abused don't think that's love. They know it's abuse. Just for whatever reason, the brain doesn't shrink quite the same as it does with a neglected child. But to use this as a defense is basically saying to anybody who has ever been physically, sexually molested, hey, you probably just enjoyed it. It was just a form of love. You've probably gone on to abuse your own. We know that's not true. We know it's a tiny minority of people who ever repeat patterns in this way. In fact, when people have been physically and sexually abused, they go out of their way to absolutely bring their children up in a climate of love and support because they never want to repeat the agony that they endured. But this is what they go with. And they also say that Richardson's mother, she'd suffered mental health problems. So, of course, let's bring in the mental health issue. That's going to, of course, be a reason why he violently, sadistically abuses and murders his kid. Yeah, they say this impacted on his upbringing, which it would have, of course, but not in the way they're trying to draw in. They said that the mother-son relationship was cold. Yeah, really? Well, welcome to pretty much 40% of the population who also claim that they have a parent who's cold. Why is that going to make you a killer? And Richardson himself had apparently also had an undiagnosed mental problem. Yeah, I think psychopathy and narcissism would be the main problems there, wouldn't it? Can we just throw that in without even having to get a psychiatrist involved? But anyway, they get a forensic psychiatrist to kind of assess him, and they conclude that he suffered with depression, anxiety disorder, mood disorder, and substance abuse disorder. So again, are we literally losing our minds as I say this? Because that does not make you a killer. Loads of people are depressed, loads of people are anxious, loads of people suffer from clinical level depression and anxiety. And also, a lot of people have substance abuse disorders. They're not out there abusing and murdering children. Otherwise, the world would be in a really terrible place because it is very common. He also has this history of alcohol and drug abuse, apparently starts drinking heavily in school. And that, again, seems like the flimsiest introduction to this thread of causation. None of that in any way, shape or form in this universe or any universe is going to accommodate what I've talked about so far regarding what happened to Tegan. But yeah, they say all of these things and then they add insult to injury as far as I'm concerned. They say that Richardson had not sexually assaulted Tegan. Yeah, apparently those horrific tears to her vagina and anus that caused her to lose catastrophic blood loss, yeah, they didn't exist. Yeah, hadn't sexually assaulted her at all. And also, hadn't meant to kill her. Actually, he'd loved her. And he'd wanted the three of them to be the perfect family. The defence are on some kind of hallucinogenic, I believe, when they're presenting this. Because they are not in the real world, are they? When they are trying to get across that this guy is just a victim. He's just a victim. He's just had a horrible childhood. And he thinks that when he is torturing and abusing and molesting this child, this is just a sign of normal love. This is just how people show love in the world. I mean, honestly, where did this lawyer go to get educated? Was it the school of Ted Bundy? I don't know. But clearly, there is something delusional about this defence. But because apparently he's had all this horrible treatment, he didn't have the parenting skills or the experience, he couldn't control his anger. And they try to dismiss the head injury that is caused to Tegan by saying, yes, he was shaking her, he was really angry at the time, but unfortunately she hit her head on the door. Notice how now it's the child's responsibility. She's the victim in this, but it's a child's response. She hit her head on the door. Not some grown-ass abuser is shaking her violently. No, no. She hit her head on the door. And then they blame Tegan's mother for teaching Richardson that abusing her daughter was appropriate. That she'd allowed it to happen and that had been a reinforcer of his behaviour. Now, I, as you know, during this case, have come down hard on Tegan's mother. But that's absolutely ludicrous. It really is. You can witness behaviour of an adult to a child and have no experience bringing a child up, and you know it's wrong. The average 11-year-old, 5-year-old even, can see the maltreatment of another child and call it out because they know it just isn't meant to occur. So the idea that we're now projecting blame onto Tegan's mother in this respect is ridiculous. I mean, it's common for defence to do this, but I'm sorry, there is no defense here. It should have been, you need to go guilty, you need to accept responsibility, and you need to take the consequences because everything that you've done is reprehensible and you do not deserve to walk the streets ever again. It's as simple as that. I'm not even sure you deserve to breathe again. We get to the 25th of March, 2014. So there's been a 4-week trial and then there's only 1 hour of deliberation. And I love that. I love it because I know that the defense's stomachs will have just dropped. If you get 1 hour of deliberation after a 4-week trial, you know it's over. That person is getting guilty. We've got a jury of 7 women and 5 men, and they find 25-year-old Richardson guilty of first-degree murder, first-degree kidnapping, and first degree sexual offence of a child and felony child abuse inflicting serious injury. So guilty on every single count. Now, apart from the fact that I feel that the entire jury should be sent flowers and chocolates and also probably a 2-week holiday somewhere, because to deal with the traumatic things that they have seen, and then to also conclude correctly that this man is a monster, makes me proud of these kind of citizens. Because we have to remember, these are individuals who are just going about their daily life. They're called in to be on a jury. They have no idea what they're actually going to be seeing. And then they see the worst of the worst, and they have the good grace to actually do the right thing. And in this case, absolutely ignore all of that twaddle by the defense and ensure that that little girl's legacy of justice will at least occur. Now, prior to Richardson actually getting sentenced, they did a search of his cell and they found a handmade knife. Now, arguably, I don't believe that knife was to hurt himself, because he had a handmade knife. Could have cracked on, couldn't he? When it went dark, when everybody was locked up, if you're going to do something to yourself, do it. So again, for me, what's that saying about this individual? He's got a handmade knife. It's probably to attack somebody else. And after they find this, he actually appears in court wearing leg shackles. So I think that they feel that he's a danger to other people. Then we get to the sentencing phase of the trial. Of course, what did the defense do? They try to spare him from the death penalty. In fact, this is quite ironic. So the defense, who have had a poor defense, can we all agree? And actually, I feel a very disrespectful defense when it comes down to Tegan and the memory that she deserves and the legacy that she deserves. But this takes the biscuit. So this is when they're deciding, you know, whether to put him to death or not. So the defense go, you know what? You could put him to death. That is absolutely possible. You've got a right to do that. It's within your control and power. But I just want to suggest, using my weird manipulation mind control, that you could put him to death, but it'd be a far greater punishment not putting him to death. Sorry, just run me through that again. Well, you could put him to death, end his life, the ultimate really, where you literally kill him. Or you could do something even worse and you could not kill him. But if we don't kill him, he's still alive, and then he gets to like live every day and interact with other prisoners and maybe do some courses in prison and live out his life, potentially a long life, and be looked after all that time. That's right. That's a fate worse than death. Is it really a fate worse than death? Because I'm pretty sure that death is the ultimate worst thing that could happen. I know where you're going with this, but I'm just saying, you could put him to death or you could keep him alive. And what we're saying is, that's worse. Just before we stop this conversation, as a defence, are you saying that you defending him, where you're actually there to get him a better outcome, your argument is you would rather him have a far worse outcome, in your words, a fate worse than death, by keeping him alive in prison? You'd rather him, apparently, according to you, suffer more than the death penalty would give him? Yeah, that's what we're saying. Because usually it'd be the prosecution saying that stuff. I know, but were you in court? Did you hear the defence we had? Honestly, we're just throwing it out there. Literally, we've got no idea what we're doing. We probably just need to go and get new jobs. Seriously, it drives me mad. But this is what they do. They try to get the jury to spare him from the death penalty, saying that life in prison without parole would be a worse sentence, especially given the heinous crime that he committed. He'd be a target for other inmates, so that therefore there would be a potential problem for him on a daily level. In fact, the defense attorney said, there will never come a time when he can let his guard down. So what a nice defense. They want you to have a worse time than you would have if the prosecution got their way, which is probably the death sentence. Makes no sense whatsoever. Anyway, we get to the 3rd of April 2013. This is after less than 3 hours of deliberation. The jury actually recommend the death penalty. So they're like, yeah, do you know what? We're just going to go for the apparently more lenient resolution here and just kill him. So we get to March 2019 because the case hasn't just ended with him getting guilty and going to prison and being on death row. We have another individual who is still considered guilty of certain crimes. So this is almost 10 years after Tegan's death. At this point, her mother, Helen Rees, pleads guilty to child abuse. She admits at this point that she showed reckless disregard for the welfare of a child, and that had resulted in serious bodily injury. She got sentenced to 18 to 31 months in prison. Some may feel that's very lenient. I personally think at least it's acknowledged that she did something wrong, she made horrible mistakes, and at the same time that she's willing to go guilty on that. I have a respect for the fact that she was willing to go guilty and she didn't contest that charge. Now, Richardson currently remains on North Carolina death row in Central Prison. He's awaiting his execution. He has never shown any remorse for his crimes whatsoever. Why? Because his brain don't function that way. He's a proper psychopath. At the end of the day, he doesn't think what he did was wrong. He probably enjoyed it. He probably feels hard done to, but he's certainly not going to care for his victim. When you think about Tegan, and like I said, you guys asked me to cover this case, and I'm glad I have, but it has been a grueling one because it is so horrific. You think about the way she died. She was left on the day of her 4th birthday with the man who would kill her. She was locked alone in a shed with just an abuser. No one was there that she could ask for help. He systematically tortured and abused her until her little gorgeous body gave out. Now, Tegan's family, they have to bear the brunt of these scars. And the only way that they can give her legacy is to focus not on the end, but on the life where she was loved. They want to remember her as the happy little girl she was before Richardson entered her life. Apparently, she loved the color purple. She loved butterflies. She loved catching ladybirds in her grandmother's garden. Her grandfather said, the thing about Tegan was she just wanted someone to love her. She wanted people to show her love. And that she just showed love so freely. Her auntie said that she will remember her as a sweet girl who would wake up with the words, "It's a sunny day. Let's play." And I think that that statement demonstrates the kind of human being that Tegan would have become. To wake up and just think the sun's out, let's play. It demonstrates a sunny disposition, a disposition that would have been good to this world. And the brutality that she endured in those last days of her life is just incomprehensible. But the memories of the people who loved her, they're still there. They will always be there. Tegan will always be loved. Tegan's life will always have meaning, unlike Richardson, who genuinely, I hope genuinely does have to literally every day feel the impending reality of his doom. The fact that one day his life will be taken, not in the brutal circumstances of Tegan, but nonetheless will be taken by others that control his downfall. Tegan was a beautiful little girl. She deserved so much more. She was denied the opportunity to play out her life as she should have been allowed to. The way that she was murdered is one of the most brutal crimes I have ever come across. But I swear to God, in those 4 years that she was alive, she had more meaning to this world than Richardson's pathetic excuse for a being would ever have had. And the idea that the defense used his abuse as an excuse for the brutal torture and sadistic murder and abuse of this child is disgraceful, and they should hang their heads in shame. The only good thing is that we can kind of laugh at their ineptitude when it came down to trying to manipulate a jury of intelligent human beings who knows that being put to death is certainly a lot worse than being kept alive. And I'm sure that they had a giggle at the defence's pathetic attempt to sway and skew a case that so deservingly required the outcome that it's got. I don't know when he'll die, but I know that when he does, that's just going to be the very beginning, isn't it, of his eternal damnation. And I think we can all look forward to that moment. Please leave me a comment. Let me know your thoughts. If you know any more information about Tegan's case, I hope I've done it justice. I am very triggered by this one. You know how I feel about young people and children, but there is just something about the brutality of this that really stands out. Like I said, I think I've come down quite hard on Tegan's mother, but I do think there's reasons for that. And I think, again, remember that thing about risking offending, guys. People saw this man abusing that child and they didn't speak out. We have to speak out. We have to speak up. We have to be the voices of these children, because otherwise horrific outcomes like Tegan's occur, and no child should ever have to face the reality of these predators and the consequences of their actions. Let me know your thoughts. Be safe. And this is dedicated to Tegan. I hope that she's playing with butterflies and ladybirds, and that heaven is as sunny as she desires. Take care.